Madam Ambassador, it's a great honor to have you here today on the FAZ podcast für Deutschland. You've been the American ambassador to Germany since February 2022. To begin with, what is your personal connection to this country here?
Well, first of all, thank you, Simon, for having me. It's just a wonderful pleasure to be here. My experience as ambassador has been very personal as well as professional. The first thing that I thought about when President Biden called me and asked me if I would be his ambassador to Germany is how proud my father would be. My father lived his whole early life in Germany in a small town, Feuchtwangen, near Nuremberg, and he had to escape Nazi Germany in 1934 because of Hitler's coming to power. And so for his daughter to be coming back to his homeland as ambassador is something he would be incredibly proud of. And he'd also be proud of the United States and Germany for what they've become as being such strong allies. So it's been quite amazing for me to come back here. I should tell you a little bit about the story of my father, because it's been such a formative part of my life. He grew up in Feuchtwangen and was apprenticing to a metallurgist in Nuremberg in 1934. And he was boarding with a Christian family who treated him like a child, you know, his own, their own child. He was 23 years old and they were very good to him. And one day he saw them Heil Hitler at a Nazi march, Nuremberg being the center of the Nazi rallying ground. And he said to them, and he told me this story, this was the one story he told me quite often, because he didn't want to speak too much about the trauma of his past. He said to them, if people like you are saluting Hitler, something even more terrible is going to happen in this country. And he had to leave. So he left and at the age of 23 and made his way to India, where he had traveled because of his apprenticeship. And then he made his way on a visit to the United States, met my mother, who was American, got married shortly thereafter. And I was born in the U.S. and brought up as an American, a proud American, always knowing about my German origins and how important they were.
Did that then in your academic life also play a role? I read a couple of essays and work, and I see always, I saw quoted Habermas a lot. And so the political, German political science is important for you too, I feel.
Very much so. The whole idea of the importance of, not just the importance of democracy, but the importance of defending human rights and having a dialogue across differences, because after all, what brought the Nazis to power, among other things, and what has fueled tyrants like Vladimir Putin is this ability to divide people because of their religion or their race, or just anything that differentiates people. So my life's work in some way has been the reverse of that, which is, I think, the foundation of democracy. What we call in our country, e pluribus unum, out of many one, finding unity and prosperity and freedom with diversity, bringing people together. And that's, to me, the foundation of democracy. And that's, to me, the foundation of human rights and everything we do, which is making our lives richer, more vibrant, frankly, more fun by appreciating the differences. And that's been part of my life scholarship, of showing how that, not only what's good about that, but how it can work, how it can make everybody's life better if only we see the promise of diversity rather than find, you know, bring out the worst in human nature, which is hatred and fear.
So before you worked your whole life in academia, would you say this has prepared you in a special way for being a diplomat?
I hope so, and I think so. And historically, U.S. ambassadors to Germany have come from many backgrounds, including there have been other university presidents. The former president, after World War II of Harvard, was a U.S. ambassador to Germany. I'm the first woman ambassador to a unified Germany, but I'm not the first academic. Mm-hmm. And it's Germany has had this incredible diversity of U.S. ambassadors, beginning with a president of the United States, and including various university presidents. I think it's prepared me well for a couple of reasons. One, because of my scholarship and teaching about the importance of democracy. And President Biden today says correctly something I've said as well in my teaching and scholarship, which is democracy and its defense is the defining challenge of our time. So that's one reason. The other reason is being a university president requires a lot of diplomacy.
Yeah, I see. When you look at Germany today, I mean, you highlighted the importance of your personal legacy with this country, or your father's legacy. How do you look in this country today? What do you think is what is good about it, but also what is bad about Germany in your view?
So because I have this historical perspective on Germany, which begins before World War II, due to my father's legacy, I see how much Germany has progressed. In fact, I think it's one of the great stories of progress over the last century. And not only Germany, but the U.S.-German relationship. It's never been stronger. So that's one thing and a primary feature of our work today together. And I see it personally firsthand when I see the relationship between President Biden and Chancellor Scholz. It's one of mutual respect. It's one of friendship. It's one of a deep sharing of values. That's true at the level of president and chancellor. And what I've seen at the level of just everyday life in Germany is I felt so welcome here. I feel that our cultures share some really important values, which include democracy and a defense of human rights. But that may sound very lofty. I see it at the sort of day-to-day level that the interchange, the valuing of freedom and how welcome I've been and the unity in combating anti-Semitism, the culture of remembrance here, I think there's a lot we as Americans can learn by how important it is to remember the past and acknowledge the sins of the past. So we at the embassy this year premiered in Europe Ken Burns' documentary on the U.S. and the Holocaust, which shows not only all the great things the United States did in helping to liberate with our allies, liberate Europe from Nazis, but also what the U.S. didn't do. We blocked a lot of immigration that would have been possible for Jews who were under the horrors of the Holocaust and otherwise were exterminated. We could have done more. So those are the fact that Germany acknowledges the past and never again is something that I think is true in its culture. You asked me about what what's less positive about Germany. I'll tell you something which I laugh about with Germans a lot. I find German culture from an American perspective quite pessimistic. So if I say it's a beautiful day today. It's sunny. I can almost predict with near certainty that my German friends will say, but tomorrow it's going to rain. And I was actually on a flight from Munich to Berlin. And you know how the pilots get on before you land and tell you the weather. And they said, in Berlin, it's 20 degrees and it's sunny, but tomorrow it's going to rain. That's a very understandable part of German culture, but I do find it it's jarring for an American like me who's always been brought up to see what we can do, what more we can do that's positive, and always looking at the bright side of things, despite the fact that my mother and father live through some really horrible things. And my father actually shared that German. I mean, my father was not an optimist. A dear friend of mine who's now deceased called possibilism, Albert Hirschman, who's featured in a new documentary. It's not a documentary. It's a fictionalized history of our transatlantic relationship called Transatlantic. which we premiered in Berlin. Another great example of German-American relations, because Anna Winger, who's the director and writer of the Netflix series, is American, living in Berlin. And it features one of the primary characters is Albert Hirschman, whom I knew really well. He was an economic historian at Princeton Institute for Advanced Study. And he called this possibilism. What's possible? And I think Americans and Germans today, in working to help Ukraine win this war against Putin, I think we're both possibilists. We're looking for what we can do to make it possible for David to beat Goliath, because this is a David versus Goliath story.
But on the topic of transatlantic issues, we are today, in these days, in a heated debate fueled by the French President Macron about the third way, a European sovereignty, and bigger independence from the US. Do you worry when you hear him speak about this in these terms?
I see the reality of our times as one of the transatlantic relation being stronger than ever. And I see that as something that will continue, because we share the values of democracy, of defense of human rights, of combating anti-Semitism and racism and other forms of hatred, and because the only alternative for our people, and when I mean our people, all people, that will work for our children and our grandchildren is for us to be unified, because we share these values. So we sometimes differ on the tactics, on how we what we need to do to get there, but because we're such strong allies, we argue those out as allies, and more often than not, and certainly over the past year, we have come to do things together that have made an incredible difference, not only in supporting Ukraine, which is first and foremost essential to our freedom as well as Ukraine's freedom, because none of us wants the borders of our countries to be changed by force, by an alien power, but also essential for things like bringing down energy prices, which I really admire. What I really admire Germany for doing is helping in the defense of our democratic sovereignty and our freedoms by helping Ukraine defend itself, and also working to make it affordable for our own citizens, which is something, again, that Germany and the U.S. are doing. So the other things we hear, I think, are examples of how allies may have different views about the tactics, but I don't see those as changing the primary way we're moving forward, which is together in shared strength. For example, NATO is stronger than it's ever been, by far. I mean, look, Finland is now part of NATO. Sweden will soon be part of NATO. Nobody a year ago would have imagined that. Mm.
Although the expression vassal of the US, we shouldn't be a vassal of the US, is a little bit confrontational to be a tactic, no?
Well, I think put that way, taken literally, the US agrees. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are allies. When people say to me about the war that Ukraine is defending itself against Putin, we couldn't do this without the U.S. The first and foremost thing that comes to my mind, which is absolutely true, is the U.S. couldn't do it without Europe and our allies. Mm-hmm. So we have to be allies together in order to defend ourselves. And that's as true for the U.S. as it is true for Germany, for France, for the United Kingdom. It's absolutely essential. And if we lose sight of that, we will lose.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. So you would say that sovereign Europe is, in the perspective of the U.S., something you wish for. Sovereignty of Europe.
I would say that every country needs to make sovereign decisions. And the integrity of our country's borders is essential to that. And every country can relate to that. By the way, even non-democratic countries can relate to that. It's so basic. And so sovereignty of France, of Germany, of Italy, of Spain, of Ukraine is just critical. And of course, the EU has its own unity, which is very important as well. That said, the cooperation among democracies and other countries that value their sovereignty is critically important, which is one reason why, no matter what our differences, the things that unite us are far stronger and will serve us far better.
Mm-hmm. If you look at the Russian aggression, maybe we talk about this in a second as well, and you compare it to the Chinese aggression of the world politics. Now, how would you weight the two aggressions, the problems there? Is it really so that we have to fear China as a military aggressor as well, Sue?
I don't believe that the emotion of fear is very productive. However, I do think we have to have our eyes wide open to the fact that China is allying with Russia in this war against Ukraine. This war would end today if Putin just decided he would stop aggressing against Ukraine. And China knows that, and yet China is allying with Putin, against its own principles, by the way, because it values the sovereignty of countries as well it should. So I don't think it's fear of the PRC. I think it's being realistic that we have to say, as we have, and as Chancellor Scholz has, as President Biden has, and many other world leaders have, we have to say to President Xi that we object to your alliance with Russia in this fight against Ukraine, and we are putting you on notice that you should not supply Putin and Russia with arms. And as far as China as a world power, we in the United States, we don't seek, and President Biden has said this repeatedly, we don't seek to be the sole power of the world. Unrealistic and not desirable. What we do seek is a fair playing ground for trade, for investment, and to have a multiplicity of powers in the world that trade with one another and deal with one another peacefully and fairly. And China violates a lot of those rules. They also are gross violators of human rights. So those are things that make China a systemic rival to our way of life.
And in the case of a military attack of China towards Taiwan, what would the U.S. expect from the European allies in this case?
Well, first of all, we don't want to be in the position of China breaking the peace with regard to Taiwan. We accept the One China policy and we support the status quo, where Taiwan can live peacefully as part of China. And so that's what we're working on with our European allies, which is to make that situation last. And I think we have a good chance of doing that, especially if we stay allied. And I think one of the great ways that we achieve peace in the world is through cultural exchanges. We've talked a lot about the politics of this. I see the cultural part of our relationships as being absolutely basic to what enables us to achieve progress. So, for example, we have a Congress-Bundestag exchange program for young people. And that has created the world of difference between the way the U.S. and Germany used to approach each other, which was not with common values, and the way they do now. And those kinds of cultural exchanges across countries are so, so valuable.
And would you say also, looking in the future, that, you know, the role of Germany could also be to reintegrate Russia as the big aggressor now into, you know, a normalization. I mean, Germany experienced this incredible gratitude in the past. And now we have the question, the moral question, what will happen after the war with Russia? Is there also culture? Could there be a link to reintegrate Russians?
There are incredible cultural exchanges across all of our countries. And the first order of business is to defeat Putin's aggression and to stop that. And after that, and there will be an after, to help Ukraine, you know, reconstitute itself. There's so much interchange between Russian members of Russian society and the U.S. and Germany. And Germany, of course, is so close geographically that I think once Ukraine can reach a victory in this terrible war of aggression by Putin, then I think everything is possible. And until it reaches a situation where its sovereignty is guaranteed and its territory is restored, nothing is possible with regard to Russia, because what Putin is doing to his own people is an atrocity. And what they're doing to Ukraine constitutes, as we've said, crimes against humanity.
Maybe the last question.
Yeah.
When you look in the future, and you talked about the German American, the US, and the German relationship, what side is more danger to danger this this relationship? I mean, you have elections coming up in your country, but also in Germany, there are more and more on the left and on the radical right anti-American paroles, pro-Russian paroles. So where do you see the challenges being a pessimistic German in this relationship?
Well, being a possibilist, let's find common ground that we both want to see what's possible for our people together. I think what's possible is what we're seeing now and building on it. What we're seeing now is, in my country, a very, very strong bipartisan support for our allied support of Ukraine against Putin. There's a saying in that I really believe in, that a crisis is a terrible opportunity to waste, and we're not wasting it. The German-US relationship is stronger than ever. The transatlantic alliance and NATO are stronger than ever. I think in Germany, the standing strong against the extremes that pose violence as a solution is very strong, that there's a German unity across parties in across the spectrum of both the current coalition and the CDU-CSU against the fringes. In the U.S., the same is true. So I am realistically optimistic that that's going to last, not without our working together. So the welcoming that Germans have given to me and our mission here, which is to strengthen the transatlantic alliance, has been very important. And we've had so many congressional delegations, Republicans and Democrats alike, who've come to Germany. They're record numbers over the past year, and they are strongly supportive of the German-US and the transatlantic relationship. And I think that's going to last because it's been so productive.
Madam Ambassador, thank you very much for your time, for your reflections, and also for your work.
Thank you so very much for having me. Really appreciate it.